The New Balance Furon V8. Crafted for speed. Tested and worn by Bukayo Saka. Experience engineered minimalism at its finest and fastest. We updated the Furon V8 for even faster performance on the pitch. Same ultra lightweight, precision strike focused design. Now with even greater sense of speed. A new speed control stud supports control during sudden stops, sharp pivots, and moves used by the fastest players, like Saka himself. Step up your game in the new Furon V8. Learn more and get yours at newbalance.com/soccer.
The Koigi Call on Off the Ball.
If Arsenal don't become attractive in that way that they're going to win European Cups, Chelsea will continue to attract the players and continue to become the most powerful team.
Subscribe to the Koigi Pod on the Off the Ball app now.
To hear the full version of the Sunday paper review, become an Off the Ball member now.
We might start with the prevalence of, I was going to call it the camogie story, but really it's the Scort story. Because we were sat here last week, Orla, actually discussing your own article amongst others and the wider topic, and assuming that this story had sort of hit rock bottom and it really couldn't get any worse. And we see it's on the front page of the Sindo today, and the splash at the latest angle on the story, obviously. The letter by the camogie chief, Brian Malloy, urging delegates to vote to give players the option in 11 days' time to wear skorts or shorts. And then Brendan O'Connor, as you mentioned, it's across a lot of the papers. It is certainly the talk of the nation. In my own experience, I definitely have found it to be that water cooler conversation, the go-to when you sidle up alongside somebody in social circles. It's remarkable how much of a topic of conversation it's become. Why do you think that is?
It's just like people who are kind of interested in the GAA, just, you know, they look at it and they think, oh, you know, how are they still talking about this? How is this still an issue? People who didn't have any awareness of it hear it and then kind of think, sorry, what? They're still being made to wear skirts. Like, I was talking about it to my editor during the week. I had been researching something for another piece on it, and I was looking, and there was stories on Reuters and AP about this, and it was around the world, right? So it just, it becomes, what's happened now is there's huge reputational damage to the association being done, because it looks like they're this backward dinosaur organisation who are forcing girls into skirts when they're playing their sport. It's doing damage in the respect that they're going to lose players, and they have lost players, and they will continue to lose players if they don't change the rule. So there's a damage to the game there as well. But it's just one of those things that when people hear it as a headline, players, you know, in standoff with referee over the fact that they're being made to change into skirts to play sport, it just seems astonishing. And that's, it's that big picture headline. I know you can drill down into the granular detail and people will talk about tradition and, you know, this version of the skirt was better than that one and there's a reason for it and isn't it better than the longer skirts, etc., etc. But at this stage, when you look at the big picture and the headline of it, it's indefensible.
Yeah, it's been an interesting read this morning, actually getting into some of the detail around it, and it's made for even worse reading than I thought. Some of the stuff that that has come up, especially at that Dublin Kilkenny game, where this kind of all started from, for the wider conversation, and you know, Dermot Crowe gets into a little bit. He has an interview with Kerry Finnegan in the Independent, and talks about, I suppose the first thing is the players getting ordered off the pitch to get changed back into the skorts. They're given a timeline, 15 minutes, pretty tight turnaround to go and do that. In the meantime, Kerry Finnegan talks about them playing the national anthem before the game while they're still in the changing room. And then it gets even worse. You have a player who gets yellow carded. While she's getting a yellow card, the referee realises that she's wearing a nose stud inside her wearing a helmet, and he gives her a red card and sends her off. So he sends her back to the dressing room twice in the one game, really. And you've got a blanket. You don't have a blanket ban on jewellery across the GA, but camogie does. And I guess it speaks to this control thing. And then that's what's come up here, that this isn't about skorts and shorts. And it's about against player power, I suppose, on one side. But not allowing the players to choose to wear shorts if they want to. Just kind of sad stuff, really. Yeah.
It's the choice thing that seems to be, they're not trying to ban the skort. And this is, you know, it comes up, it was McCurtains who brought that motion to Congress last year, and they wanted to give the choice. And a majority voted for choice, 55%. It just wasn't the two-thirds majority they needed to get the motion passed. You read the GPA survey and you have 83% of players saying that they polled, saying that they want to have a choice. Yeah. And if you want to wear a skirt and you don't have a problem with a skirt, absolutely fine. You do you. But give somebody else the option, because not everybody, not everything suits everybody. That's why players, you know, choose different, whatever it is. You choose a different helmet, you choose a different brand of hurl. You know, you make choices in so many other areas, but you have no choice in this. And it's just to be mandated to wear something that is affecting your performance, because that's another thing how players spoke about how it does affect their performance. It affects them mentally. And like you're talking about Charlene Maudsley being on the front of the Times there. I remember being in here a few months back and there was an interview with Charlene Maudsley where she talked about part of her process for preparing for racing is working on her appearance. She'll sort her hair and she'll make sure her makeup is right. And she, her feeling is, look good, run fast. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what she does. And that's something that is not enough respect given to for female athletes, I feel, because if that is part of your process, then, you know, respect that and let people deal with it. But just telling them they have to wear this and it affecting how they feel on the pitch, how they feel. There was players talking about how they feel when they see themselves on their club social media, that they can't look at pictures of themselves wearing skorts because they hate how they feel.
Yeah, there was a good conversation about it on one of our podcasts during the week as well. They, do you know, I apply that point to male athletes as well, that like a lot of them, you know, a lot of, regardless of male or female, you want to, you know,
your
putting yourself up in, you know, a big
your
thing
armor.
In tennis, I presume, as well, like that sort of attention to detail around your appearance and like making sure everything is pristine and
it's part of your routine. And, you know, at the end, I'd always wear a sweatband at the end of the match. I'd always take it off before I shook hands with my opponent. I did that for 15 years straight. It's a part of what you do. And yeah, it's a choice. And it obviously shows that there's a massive disconnect between the players and, I guess, the delegates. I'm not sure exactly who delegates are or what that looks like. Just are they guys in blazers?
They are, yeah. So that was
blazers.
The spirit of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So they get, you know, nominated by their clubs and into the county board, and then they're given a mandate, typically at county board level, maybe in this instance. So, you know, this topic is going to come up for discussion at Congress. You know, we're giving you a mandate to say, to vote in favour of giving players the choice. Now, what that delegate does with that mandate is entirely up to themselves, and oftentimes these votes are anonymous.
That's what Dermot Crowe kind of again speaks about in this piece. Is at the last conference, it seemed like the delegates were totally underprepared.
Yeah.
Were texting players the morning of, saying, "Listen, what do you feel about this?" Like, it obviously wasn't brought forward. And I guess respected enough that this how big an issue this is, and it's gone to a point where the players have had to go out to matches and semi-finals of championships to say, "Listen, this is how we want to play."
Hope that there's a good process put in place now to actually get the feelings, because this is going to be a one issue. Maybe there was a lot of motions going to that Congress. Maybe they had to gather a lot of views on a number of things. Now they know they're going to talk about one thing. You go to each club and you say, poll your players. You come back with that, you feed it into a wider, you know, county level survey, and you actually represent the views of the players.
What happens if so they need a two-thirds majority? Like, there is a possibility here that it gets rejected again.
Well, what do you do? Do you go on strike? Like, is this, the GPA are involved in this now, right? And the GPA, like, what happened last week was they had a plan, like the two teams, Dublin and Kilkenny, together decided they were going to go out, and they did. The backroom or the squad players, everybody, there was 60 players togged out in shorts. It wasn't just, you know, there's a number of players.
And they'd obviously brought skorts as well, because they knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, they
so
knew.
They went,
and
so,
they talked about how they weren't prepared to forfeit the game. They wanted to make the stand. And there's levels here, right? Mm. So the next level was Cork and Waterford saying, we will forfeit the game. We are going to let this come to a head. And that's obviously why the decision was made, a crazy decision with 16 hours notice to postpone a final, when the Camogie Association and Munster Camogie Council had known since Wednesday that the players had come out and said, we won't be fraterning. We are not going to go back. We are not going to get changed. So they had all that time and they left it till 8 p.m. on Friday night to decide, no, tell you what, let's head this off the pass, instead of applying the common sense that Dublin were applying and saying temporary relaxation on rules until we can get this through Congress. We need to give a certain level of time for the players to be polled, for delegates to get the, you know, the votes and know what's happening to go to Congress. So that's fine if Congress can happen. But between now and then, temporary relaxation, as the Dublin board did, and club matches continued in Dublin during the week.
Yeah. I had heard the example of one county where they had told referees and teams that they could go ahead and wear shorts in league matches, I think it was, and that they'd be issuing a letter afterwards. And so they went ahead, they wore the shorts, the county board issued a letter.
I think it might have been Dublin.
They issued a letter to the clubs and they sent a fine of €1 per club.
Okay.
And I thought that was a good silent protest almost in itself. Yeah. Now listen, ideally you don't have to do that at all, and like, but we are where we are.
Ideally it should not be up to the county boards or the individual referee on the day. There should be leadership coming from the top on this issue. And this is, to me, a thing that's been missing all week, is the leadership. There's been too much silence and, you know, not enough leadership coming from the top of the Camogie Association. And I know they'll say that the Munster Council are responsible for the Munster final, but they are the ones who ultimately decide the rules. And there needs to be more leadership on this, and not leaving it to, you know, they called off the match rather than have this come to a head.
Well, they didn't want the photographs in the papers like they'd been from the previous weeks. And it was badly managed from a PR point of view as well. But the leadership has been all kind of reactive, I suppose, which is maybe not ideal. Like, it's a women's rights issue really at the core of it. And I think for me, that's why people are fascinated and interested about this, because there's that idea of, particularly the fact that, like, listen, with the best will in the world, I don't really know the first thing about Brian Malloy, who's the Camogie chief. But I think the fact that there's a man running the association and there's that, you know, dynamic going on of, you know, women being told what to wear, it's not a great look. And for me, that's the reason that it's been a bit pervasive.
And part of that was, you know, that picture from the Dublin Kilkenny match last weekend. It was a male referee, and unfortunate for them that it was a male referee, because, again, that's the picture that gets seen on websites around the world, and people look at it as there's a man telling two women to go off and change their playing attire, you know?
Yeah. And like, listen, maybe he's not to blame, but like,
well, he didn't cover himself in glory, then sending off the player as well.
He actually could have said, "Let's go."
Now,
he probably wouldn't referee a game again. Is the reality?
Well, I don't know about that, but yeah, you got to, either you're standing up for it or you're not. Mm-hmm. You know, but going back to that, there's obviously a thread through history of this, especially in Ireland, and Eamon Sweeney in the Sunday Indo, you know, speaks about it. You know, how, I guess, The history, the first All-Ireland Camogie final took place in 1933. Camogie's out of step because it's an older sport. It took the first steps 41 years before the first ladies' football final in an era when the very idea of female sport was offensive to the Puritans who ruled Ireland of those days. Yeah. So it's like this unentangling of our history kind of playing out in this really messy way in 2025. I hope the Congress gets through, but I know it's a funny feeling. There's another twist in this, unfortunately, but I hope not.
Could be. I wondered on your point earlier, Orla, about the idea of, you know, giving choice, right? If I'm a traditionalist in that thing, I kind of know that ultimately this is the start of the end for Scorts. Like, if this gets passed, the reality is, while we're all saying it's about choice, and of course it is, but it's the end of the sport, really.
Well, the anecdotal evidence is that players don't wear it in training. So if you're not wearing it in training, where you're supposed to be preparing, you know, at the level that you would to play a match, and you're not going to wear that, why is it going to continue?
Amazing,
you
know? Fidelity to the sport from the Camogie Association.
It's a weird hill to die on, isn't it?
It's an odd hill to
tradition,
die on.
You know, tradition should not come at a cost, and it is coming at a cost now.
Yeah.
And it's like Eamon Sweeney's piece, I kind of, like, the subhead, he talks about it's time for Camogie to treat its players with respect. But like, women's sport in general, women in sport need more respect, because it's part of a wider piece where women's sport is othered to a degree, where men's sport is the default and women's sport is kind of happens, you know, sure, let the girls play as well. And that's what happened, was girls wanted to play and they were given Camogie to play and told to wear skirts which had to be no more than 8 inches off their ground. Like, you know, you had to wear ankle length skirts, and they wore gym slips, and they wore all sorts, you know.
And ladies skating football, they're wearing shorts. So, you know, and Nadine Doherty in the Indo talks about, you know, the way to really show support for women's Camogie and Gaelic games this weekend is to go out and watch, you know, and actually attend the matches, which is, I think, a good point.
Yeah, and women's sport in general, that needs to be done.
She says, if even a fraction of the general public and politicians who felt the need to contribute to the debate on social media through conversations at work or with friends and family showed support for Camogie players and other female athletes by attending just a single female sporting event this summer, attendance numbers would increase by well over 1 million. And I would just sort of guard against the idea of this being an interest in Camogie. Like, I think it's people are interested in it because, as I said, it's to do with maybe women's rights and it's a wider thing.
Yeah, and that's why it's gone international as well. Yeah,
and it definitely must be infuriating for people who do play and love Camogie and who, you know, there are plenty of great administrators involved who, this is incredibly frustrating, that it's only coming to attention for the wrong reasons and not for the sport itself, you know?
Well, it's like, I suppose for me in tennis, sometimes I get a bit frustrated that sometimes tennis makes the headlines in Ireland when there's a drug scandal or, you know, it's Wimbledon, and then it kind of people parachute in with opinions. And I'm sure there's lots of people in Camogie who spent their whole lives and then all of a sudden I'm coming out of the woodwork with my opinions about it. So I appreciate that it's, it's for the wrong reasons. And I think there were record crowds at the last couple of Munster Camogie finals. The last couple of years, obviously we don't have one or we don't have a date now for the postponed Bupson match, but it would be great to see a huge crowd at that one. It does get played.
Yeah. It's going to run and run, isn't it? We have another 11 days to wait. Eamon Sweeney's piece talks about, like, you know, in terms of the overall, the wider impacts of it, when we talk about that, he's saying, like, you know, a new generation of outstanding stars has the potential to bring the game to new heights, but they should be free to concentrate on playing the game they love to the best of their ability. They shouldn't be subjected to distraction during a championship campaign of waiting for a Congress decision, which could heap further humiliation on them. Which is a strong word.
Because the game is coming on, you know, and I think it's in the interview where they talk about, like, you know, how training programs and nutrition and all of the other things that improved in the game has become a bit more physical at the behest of the players. You know, a lot of things have improved and it's just unfortunate that this one thing has seemed to be dragging it backwards.
Yeah. Imagine getting a call at 8:30 on a Friday night saying your game's off tomorrow and you've been prepping for it. Obviously for a year, but the week in itself and the day before, how intense that is, and then to have to reset mentally and you don't know when that final is going to be played. It again goes back to the respect thing, you know, that is so disrespectful.
I can't see that anything other than like sort of some sort of PR crisis management, I have to say. That doesn't feel
panic.
It was said somewhere that it was like made in the best interest of the player, that, you know, the
players and officials was what was in the statement.
That's
It was more like the officials who were going to have to be left on the pitch making the decision, and it should never have been left to them. And it should never have been left till the 11th hour to call off that game. As Conor rightly says, there's been so much work gone into that game in terms of preparation.
To hear the full version of the Sunday Paper Review, become an Off The Ball member now.
The Koigig Pod on Off The Ball.
If Arsenal don't become attractive in that way that they're going to win European Cups, Chelsea will continue to attract the players and continue to become the most powerful team.
Subscribe to the Koigig Pod on the Off The Ball app now.